So I want to congratulate you on just about completing successfully your first day of retreat. So it's not always easy. Even though many times people think, oh, just go do nothing, the countryside for a little bit, should be no problem. Someone else will cook for me. Don't have too much responsibilities. Don't have to walk the dog. But then what you find is that you have to deal with the body, the mind, all kinds of things that maybe otherwise we were not having to face. So it might not be a surprise to you, but if you have been experiencing any difficulty this day, since you've come here, you are correctly on schedule, according to the Buddha, of discovering dukkha. So dukkha is a word translated as strain, stress, difficulty, suffering, unsatisfactoriness, unreliability. And this is actually one of the main parts of what the Buddha talked about, what he was interested in, what he wanted to help us to find the way through. So here's some a little bit about dukkha from the Four Noble Truths, one of the main teachings. So he's listing all these things that are dukkha, suffering, difficulty. And even if you've heard this before, listen to it. This is actually the teachings of the Dhamma. This is the teachings of the truth of the way things are. So birth is dukkha. Aging is dukkha. Death is dukkha. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair are dukkha. Association with the unbeloved is dukkha. Separation from the loved is dukkha. Not getting what you want is dukkha. And then he finishes with, in short, the five clinging aggregates are dukkha. So that one will require a little bit more explanation, but start from the top there. So birth is dukkha. Everyone here has been born a couple decades ago, but some of you here have actually given birth or maybe been at births. You probably can testify that that experience of giving birth, being around someone giving birth, there's a lot of pain, a lot of difficulty. Even if it's a joyful thing, under some circumstances, to have a child, it's kind of a cold awakening into the world, being popped out, and then the baby usually cries, and mother experiences a lot of pain in the labor. Although my hosts here had told me that in the countryside, babies are often born in saunas here, so maybe it's a little easier for Finnish babies to come into a warm, moist environment. But still, you're burst and separated from the mother, and usually children will cry immediately. So, yeah, it's difficulty. And then as soon as you're born, you're subject to the possibility of getting hurt, the possibility of having your body get sick, getting injured in a variety of ways. As soon as you're born, you're subject to getting hungry, getting thirsty, getting uncomfortable, getting sleepy. Certainly also there's a possibility of much pleasure in this life, but we can't actually line up all pleasure. You know, we have to face also the difficulties. So this is a truth of how things are for us as human beings, and actually probably for all animals, in fact, too. So survival is a struggle. Keeping the body comfortable is a struggle and endless. So aging is dukkha. aging is unsatisfactory. Pretty much once you pass about 16, 25, something like that, you will not require too much more explanation for knowing this. Body gets more creaky, doesn't always do what you want it to do. Hair starts to grow in places you don't want it to grow and stops growing places that you like and changes color. So, yeah, getting older can be difficult. Fortunately, as Dhamma practitioners, we can also hope to get wiser, but for the physical body, it's only moving in one direction, aging, which is difficult. And then death is dukkha, so death is painful. And, you know, this might sound so far like very pessimistic stuff, but the Buddha says, you know, we need to face up to what's true about life. So everyone who's born is going to die. We don't know how we're going to die, and we don't know when we're going to die. But we know for sure we're going to die. So nobody is actually exempt from that. It's impossible to be exempt from that, even if you are rich or famous or good-looking or successful. Eventually, every single human being who has lived passes away, dies. And we might imagine, if we think of our death, it's in a very peaceful room with candles and loved ones around and soft music playing or something like that. But truth is, we don't know how it will happen. Could be very suddenly, could be through illness. And this is true also of our loved ones. So a very difficult part of life is having loved ones die. Those we rely upon, those that we care about. So reflecting on this and recognizing this is not aiming to make us just purely depressed, but in some ways see us what's true about this life. And if we actually recognize, for example, that everyone we know can die in some way, anytime, then maybe we actually will appreciate our time with them when we have it. And maybe we actually will pay attention and let go of little things that otherwise we might hold grudges about. We might appreciate them. We might listen to them more. Because you never know when's the last time you might see someone. But still, death is difficult. Death is often suffering. Sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and despair. So these are all negative emotions, right? Difficult emotions. That one is pretty clear. Association with the unbeloved is dukkha. So you might have found this already on retreat. Come to an unfamiliar environment and, yeah, it could be different things for different people. Maybe the weather is not beloved by you. Maybe you find that the person in the bed next to you snores, or you don't like the way the person near you in the meditation hall breathes, or something like that. So, forced to associate with the unbeloved. Many times people say on retreat, like, oh, I thought I was coming on this solitary experience, and suddenly I'm, like, crammed into this room with 40 people, and eating in very close proximity to others. Usually I'm kind of much more solitary, so. Then association with the unbeloved can also include anything. So experiences of the weather, experiences of food, even experiences of mugs. You might notice, like, oh, I wanted that mug. That other person got that cup. They put their tape on it, but that's the best mug. I wonder if when they're going to wash it, right? Like separation now. And then, yeah, separation from the loved. So you might be experiencing the sun retreat. You might miss the ones you love at home. You might miss your family, your pets, your partner. You might even miss your favorite pajamas if you forgot to pack them, or your favorite cushion, something like that. Not getting what you want is dukkha. Yeah, so we want in this life to get what we want. If a for most of us, our recipe for well-being has been to try to line up as many things that we want in a row as possible, to line up as many pleasant experiences as possible, and then try to do that from now until death. And then we'll have a good life, we think. So what's wrong with that strategy? So really the only thing wrong with it is that it's not going to work, right? That's really the only thing wrong with it, is that in this world, the nature of this world is that people are not going to behave according to your wishes. Your own body is not going to behave according to your wishes. The weather will not behave according to your wishes. The food that's served may not be according to your wishes anywhere. What people say is not going to be according to your wishes. So then how can we deal with that? So the opportunity in retreat is to get to practice with this. So to see through the usual stories that we tell ourselves about what we need to be happy. Like, what is the recipe for well-being? And I think I'm going to paraphrase this quote. I think it's Thomas Merton who said something like, the Christian monk, we go to the monastery not to suffer more, but to learn to suffer more effectively. So sometimes it might seem like, oh, you go to a retreat and it's actually like magnifying your suffering, you know. Even something simple like if you sit here and you try not to move, then suddenly you're faced with the discomfort of the body in a way that you aren't if you're just sitting at home watching TV. Yeah, just sitting at home, you could move, you could itch, do this stuff, but suddenly in the meditation hall you feel some compulsion to be still, and so then the discomfort of the body reveals itself. And then it also is revealed our recipe for well-being. Like, I will be happy when all aspects of the body conform to my wishes. When I have only pleasant experiences in this life. So for many of us, we have this idea that, you know, let's say you have different areas of your life. Maybe your family life, your career, financial life, creative life, automotive life. Here maybe you have your sauna life also. Exercise, different areas of life you have. And you think like, okay, I'll be happy when all of them get to be great. So if they're on a scale of 1 to 10, when everything gets to 10, then it'll be great. When I have a good relationship, when my family's good, health is good, money is good, career is good, government is to my liking, politics is good. Weather is good, all this, right? So I'm going to like try and get everything up to 10, the top, and then I'm going to hold it there until death. So I'm going to work really hard at all these things to have the perfect job, perfect partner, get the kids to behave, right? Work out good haircut, work out good money, government I like, all this, and then I'm going to freeze that there, right? So when I say that, right, it's laughable because we know, like, it's not how the world works. Like, we can't make everything conform to our wishes like that, right? And in fact, if for some blessed moment it all comes to 10 and stays there, we know it's only for one moment before the car starts to fall apart, the kids start to misbehave, haircut starts to grow out badly, boss starts to get cranky, you know. Like, everything is so fragile in this world because everything is always changing. So here we get to explore this, you know, the Dhamma practice, like what is true about the experiential world? What is true about where we can take refuge? What is true about where we can find safety, well-being? What is true about a good strategy for happiness, for contentedness, for ease in this life? And maybe it's not what we think. Maybe it's not the common one that we spend our energy and time on. So here we get the chance to practice with a lot of difficulty in kind of like laboratory environment and to understand the way that the mind works in relationship to all of the different happenings. So what happens when something is not to our liking? So the mind gets upset about it, mind gets cranky about it, and we think like, oh, the problem is that. Yeah, if that person didn't put their shoes where I wanted them to be, or if that person didn't take the walking path I wanted or the chair I wanted, then I'd be happy. Right? But yeah, it's not actually that thing itself. It's more something about our relationship to experience that it's helpful for us to observe. So our relationship to what's happening is a key aspect of understanding suffering and the ending of suffering. And this kind of pushing and pulling that's there. The Buddha called tanha. Tanha is this like craving or leaning or like this mind that's not at ease. The mind that gets obsessed with this or that. With getting rid of things, with gaining things in some way. So on retreat, we get the opportunity to expand our ability to be okay, to be steady with a variety of different conditions, or to do our best to see the suffering that's there in the way that we usually relate to things. So we get to really feel deeply the pain of not getting what we want. And really feel deeply the pain of being separated from the loved. And you could have doubt a lot. Like maybe, you know, on this day you've had doubt. Why did I come and retreat? Why did I leave my home? Why did I leave my loved ones? It's understandable. Because the unawakened mind is best strategy for well-being is get everything to be according to my wishes. But in a world in which that's really not going to happen, for very long at least, we have to find some other way. So if the promise of this path, this promise of awakening, of enlightenment, of freedom, freedom of the heart and mind, is that there is some kind of happiness, there's some kind of well-being that's beyond all of this changing circumstance. There's some kind of contentedness or peace or ease that's possible, regardless of who is sitting next to you, or regardless of the weather, regardless of even financial situation, politics, everything. So we get a chance to experiment with this, to play with this, and to observe, like, oh, what are the conditions that come together that lead to this sense of peace? Get a taste of this sometimes, now and then. And what are the conditions that lead to this dis-ease? What's the conditions that lead to our suffering in this life? So one hint is that it's in the mind. It's not actually in the external world of physical experience. It's not about the sights, the sounds, the smells, the tastes, or even the body sensations. It's all about the mind and how we're relating to experience. The suffering arises in the mind, and freedom also is to be found there. So on this retreat, we get the opportunity to practice with this, to explore this deeply. And it's not easy. And it takes a lot of courage to do this. It takes a lot of strength of heart. It takes a lot of delicate work in some ways. It takes a lot of renunciation, of letting go, of getting to have things the way that we want them to be, usually. Often what gets revealed in the process of the practice is difficulty that we've been avoiding. And this practice, this kind of insight meditation, Vipassana tradition, and the one that I teach in is called insight meditation. And the joke is you get to gain a lot of insight, but especially in the beginning, most of the news is bad news. So we suffer more than we thought, or we have more tension than we thought. We're pushing away things that we thought. So I encourage you to go through that because there's good news on the other side too. There's also a lot of good news and possibility of unshakable freedom So now and then on retreat also you might encounter a friend, a Dharma friend here who's having some encounter with the bad news, who might be seeming to have a hard time somewhere, maybe even crying or looking lonely or lost. And really on retreat we want to give each other space. So if it feels like cruel or something not to go over and talk to them or comfort them, you could in your heart just very silently wish them well. So without going close to them or interfering, just in your heart you could just connect with something like, may you be free from suffering, or may you be well, may you be at ease. So this is some version of like metta practice, which we can talk about more. Cultivating heart of goodwill or well-wishing. And this is also something that you can do for yourself. So it's possible to cultivate a sense of goodwill towards oneself. Just very simply, may I be well, may I be at ease, may I be happy. So as we conclude our first day, we can take a moment to sit together to appreciate our efforts here. We can appreciate our aliveness, that we have been alive today. And that of all the things we could have spent our day doing, that we chose to spend it in practice. It's actually considered very noble human activity, of all the things we could be up to, all the mischief we could have spent our day doing. This is considered very beneficial, wholesome human activity. And it doesn't even matter how good you think your meditation was today or how successful you think you were. You came, you stayed, you practiced as best you could. So it's very positive human activity. We've tried to live in community and harmony with others. You did your job of cleaning or cooking or cutting vegetables or putting things away. So we've managed to live in relative harmony today together. It's a blessing. We can hold our own goodness in engaging in this way. And if we wish to remember again with gratitude those who are looking after things at home, at work, the garden, we can share the blessings from our day, we can wish well for all of those who are supporting us. May they all be at ease. May they all be at peace. May they all be happy. You can take a moment to be grateful to our teachers, formal ones and informal ones, who have supported us on our path. May they all be at peace. May they all be at ease. May they all be happy. I can consider anyone else in the world. It can include in animals. It can include populations of people we wish to share blessings with. People in different countries. May we all be at ease. May we all be happy. May we all be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. And connecting again with your own experience of the body sitting here. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be safe. May I live with ease. So you can check in and see what seems like the best thing to do. If you are tired, then it is a good time to take yourself mindfully to bed. But if you have some more energy for practice, if you have more interest, then you can also stay here, continue to sit, you can go out into the night air and walk or stand for a little bit. So begin again tomorrow. I'll be sitting before breakfast at 7, and then come for the 9:30 sitting in instructions. Slight change in the schedule, but that stuff in the morning will all be the same, so I can explain the rest of the day as it goes along. So take your own judgment of your meditation practice with a grain of salt. All of you have had good days since you're still here. So I wish you good rest, and I'll see you in the morning.